Muy buenas tardes, noches, días. Espero que estén bien. Y pues honestamente ya estoy hasta la madre, pero por el bien de la humanidad, digamos, vamos a seguir quédate en casa, hashtag quédate en casa, quedándonos en casa. Y pues ojalá algunos familiares o personas que aman no les haya afectado esto. Hace rato ya había grabado esta historia. De hecho, la grabé en inglés y la voy a grabar en inglés. Y resulta que el micrófono donde se grabó fue el de la cámara. Entonces, cuando ya fui a editarlo, para mi sorpresa, estaba mal grabado. Entonces, ni pedo. En fin, si tienes un podcast, puedes promoverlo dentro de lo que es Podcasters del Mundo. Ahí está abajo el link para que puedas unirte dentro de Facebook. También tengo lo que es Twitter. Honestamente, ya estoy hasta la madre de la política y casi lo dejo. Y cuando estaba usando el Twitter, estaba poniendo pura cosa de la política y nada de en sí de la parca, así que casi no lo uso. Honestamente, me da asco verlo. Y no nomás por la política gabacha, porque pues vivimos aquí en Estados Unidos, pero pues igual también la política mexicana, porque pues estamos en frontera. En fin, así que casi no utilizo el Twitter. De vez en cuando utilizo el Instagram y también tenemos el TikTok. También tenemos el canal de YouTube por parte de mi hijo. Así que ahí también está en la descripción el link para que si tiene chiquillos que les guste 3EMs y así videos de diversión para niños, ahí está el link de mi hijo, ese es su canal. También tenemos el de la parca, así que también lo que hago es agarro, por ejemplo, el audio de este podcast y luego ya nomás pongo una imagen y ya lo subo en el canal de la parca. De hecho, es algo, les voy a comentar algo, porque acabo de encontrar de que si nos quieren apoyar económicamente, pueden hacerlo por parte de Anchor. Es la plataforma que utilizo y pues hay diferentes niveles de patrocinio. Pueden hacer un patrocinio de, creo que es de $4.99, $10.99, y en sí también hay uno de 99 centavos. Y si usted quiere apoyarnos, la verdad que fuera es bienvenido ese apoyo, porque como les digo, esto de hacer esos podcasts parece fácil, pero es bastante tardado, desde buscar la historia, editar, grabar, asegurarte que hiciste bien las cosas y luego si no, pues otra vez grabar. Y pues es, a fin de cuentas, sí es tardado, no es nada fácil, no es como que pues grabo y como tengo la habilidad de leer perfecto, pues en una toma lo hago y todo y ahí está. No, honestamente me tardo bastante. Es como no hablo bien o no leo bien el inglés o ni a veces ni el español. Bueno, mejor dicho, no leo bien el español ni a veces el inglés. Entonces se me complican las cosas y pues ahí estoy tartamudeando, tratando de abrir el hocico para que salgan bien las palabras. Pero en fin, pero si quieren apoyar, ahí abajo está el link de Anchor. También tenemos el link de PayPal, por si también igual si esa es la manera que quieren apoyar, también bienvenidos. Así que muchísimas gracias. Saludos a todos ustedes. Estén donde estén, en cualquier parte de este mundo que nos escuchen, pues bienvenidos. El creepypasta lo voy a leer otra vez en inglés. Honestamente creo que voy a estar haciendo inglés español dentro de lo que es la parca para poder darle poquito twist, y a veces cuando trato de hacer el guión o traducirlo en español no me sabe. Entonces digo, ¿sabes qué? Este se tiene que leer en inglés, así que este es uno de ellos. De hecho, en sí, la pueden encontrar en creepypasta.com. Es una de las páginas que donde encuentro mucho de mi material. Así que este es The Unfortunate Life of Jamie Robert Mitchum. Fue escrito por el señor Matt Richardson y en sí fue publicada el 12 de marzo del 2019. Así que espero que lo disfruten una vez más. El título es The Unfortunate Life of Jamie Robert Mitchum y pues narrada por su servidor Ricardo Becerra, mejor conocido como La Parca. Ahí les va. My mother always told me to stay away from Jamie Robert Mitchum. Maybe I should have listened to her. I guess I didn't understand why at the time. I guess children are more trusting. Sure, he was a little strange. Anybody could see that. Jamie was the type of kid to play with a magnifying glass on the blacktop during a recess. You know, he was burning ants. He wore the early loss of his mother on his sleeve and the bruises from bouts with bullies on his arms. Jamie fought with everybody. He fought with the teachers. He fought with whatever parental figure stumbled through the door of his house that week. I think he would fight a dog if it looked at him the wrong way. But good friends were hard to come by at the time. We were too dark distant to stick by each other's side. My strongest memory of him begins in the fifth grade, on the day they found Maggie Hensway's body buried behind the schoolyard. Well, more accurately, the day Jamie found her body behind the schoolyard. See, we were playing cowboys and Indians at recess, same as any other day.
Jamie always insisted on being the cowboy. His interpretation of the rules included chasing me around the schoolyard with a weaponized tree wrench at the ready. Offensive stuff, I get it, even for back then. At one point, Jamie cornered me toward the back of the property. We were up against some fencing that separated us from the woods, and I thought I was done for. I thought I was finished, honestly. It was not the first time Jamie took the game a little too seriously by beating the hell out of me. The kid thrived on violence. He lifted the branch over his head. He laughed at me cowering with a maniacal fake laugh that seemed almost too real to be false. But just before he took his swing, Jamie stopped and pointed toward the pricker bush behind me. Look. Look. Let's go catch it. I'll never forget the callousness in his voice. The kid didn't even seem concerned. He didn't seem scared. He didn't try to get the teachers. He just pointed lazily, almost uninterested, at the stack of human remains just 3 feet behind my right shoulder. Honestly, guys, I looked at it and I wish I hadn't. The woman was sliced down the center of her torso, from the top of her chest to the bottom of her stomach. It almost looked like something you might see in an autopsy room. Small little stab injuries spread out through her abdomen and midsection. Her face appeared swollen and disfigured. I turned away and vomited. "Don't be a baby, bruh," he said. "It's just a body, man. Come on, let's go touch it." Before I could take in any more, I screamed. And somebody ran and got Miss A. The rest of the day honestly remains a blur. The police investigation took months. I remember that part as vividly as yesterday. They talked to Jamie. They talked to his dad. They even talked to his dad's girlfriend and almost anybody he made contact with on a day-to-day basis. My parents were even interrogated. We did not know why at the time, but later we found out when the police announced a break in the case. See, Maggie spent her last night alive in the Mitchum house. It's hard to say exactly what happened. Some believe that Mr. Mitchum, Jamie's dad, and Maggie were sleeping together. The officers and district attorneys settled on that theory and prosecuted it successfully. Nobody seemed very interested in the fact that Jamie found the body. Nobody seemed very interested in his deviant behavior at all. And so, I didn't push it either. Jamie's dad went to jail in the summer of 95. He moved in with his aunt soon after, and things only got stranger from there. Jamie liked the woods. My family house bordered the same massive forest connected to the schoolyard. For a long time, that fact seemed like the only reason we were friends at all. Every day after school, he would call the house and ask to come over. My parents worked until 5, and I was not doing anything, so I didn't mind. The tradition eventually became so ingrained that he didn't bother to ask after a while. By the time winter of 7th grade rolled around, Jamie dropped by almost each and every day, and he always wanted to go into the woods. I did not think much of that fact, well, at least at first. I probably should have connected the dots between the location of his father's drop site and the proximity to my house, but I didn't. The woods are endlessly interesting to a pair of 13-year-old kids. The creek contained fossil beds from when Jersey was underwater. The hills and the valleys provided the perfect ground for snowball fights, exploring, and all the other things we did back then. It seemed normal for another kid to want to hang out there. One day after school, Jamie brought a strange new device with him. It looked and sounded like a metal detector, but Jamie, of course, insisted otherwise. He said it was his dad's. He said that the device could detect thin lines in between worlds and that there should be one in my woods. I said that shit sounded stupid for a couple of grown teenagers. We were 13 then, well past the days of stick fights on the playground, but that comment didn't stop him from beeping all over the woods for hours on end. The noise started to get really annoying. He started to get annoying. Eventually, the whole thing felt childish, and I told Jamie the same thing. He did not take it that well. "We didn't find it yet," he whined. "Please, Matt, we need to find it. We are never going to find something that does not exist, bro. Don't you think that if there was a portal to another dimension in my backyard, the fucking government or somebody would have fucking found it by now? What if my mother's there?" he asked with a sniffle. "What if my mom is waiting to cross over and get me, and she can't? I don't want to be alone. I can't. I never seen my aunt. I want what you have. I want my family back." "How do you know she's there, bro? That doesn't make any sense. My dad told me." I stared at him. The tears on his face looked genuine. "God damn it. Fine, one last time. Let's go look." Something about that walk down the familiar path made me shiver. This happened a long time ago, but I still remember the sensation of my hair standing on my neck. I cannot figure out why at the time. Jamie looked cheerful and even hopeful for the first moment in a while. Maybe that was it. this was supposed to be our last trip, and yet he still seemed very happy. He kept his eyes fixated on the metal detector and did not pay me much mind. We decided to split up. I checked out the fossil beds for the 1,000th time. I looked for new and interesting things in the creek. A family of deer passed me by and I watched them for a while. That was interesting. As it got darker outside, I couldn't see Jamie anymore. But that persistent beep of his metal detector told me he was in range. Sometime around 4:30, the device started to freak out. The beeping pulsated so strong that it sounded like a fire alarm. After it stopped, the woods returned to silence. Bro, Jamie, it's probably just an old sewer pipe, man. Those things have metal in them, I think. From somewhere to my left, a pair of footsteps sprinted in my direction. I didn't have time to react. I didn't have time to brace for the impact. I turned just in time to catch a large boulder to the forehead. Then, the lights went out. I woke up to find my arms restricted. My head throbbed from the impact. I wanted to touch it with my hand, but I wouldn't. I wanted to cry, but the gag on my mouth made it impossible to even talk. I wanted to stare my former friend down, but the blindfold made it impossible to see. I said, "Dude, what the fuck?" I mumbled groggily. "What the fuck, bro?" Jamie just laughed. "I found it, dude. I fucking found it. I can't believe I fucking found it, bro." I tried to argue with him. I tried to tell him to untie me, but he ignored me. My dad thought he found it, bro. See, he used to come out to these woods every fucking night looking for it, but he was fucking wrong. A knife entered my abdomen. I can still feel the way the sharp blade cut effortlessly into my belly. In and then out. I screamed. "I have to do this. You know that, right?" "I don't want to." "Eh, not really. I'd rather take somebody like our English teacher, but who knows if there's time, bro. I can feel her here, can't you?" Jamie stabbed me again. I started to lose the will to fight. See, Dad told me all the rules just before he left. One life for another, and we'll be a family again. That's all it takes, a sacrifice. That's all the devil wants. The ropes around my wrists were loose, so that's why he always kept the backpack. Inside it, he had rope, blindfold, tape. He had planned this. The rope around my wrist was loose, I kept telling myself. "Don't worry about dying, bro," he continued. "Your parents, well, they're kind of old. You'll see them again in 20 years. That'll probably be as quick as turning off a light over there, bro." Then he stabbed me again, lighter this time. It was more like a scratch, as he felt bad for doing it. I turned my hand to the right and to the left. I shimmed as much as possible without giving away my intention. After a moment, I reached for the shitty knot with my free fingers and pulled it loose. The rope fell free by my feet, and I did not give Jamie the chance to react. My right fist plunged toward his face with every inch of muscle and strength remaining in my body. It connected with his jaw. My left followed a minute later, and in seconds, Jamie was on the ground. That asshole never even bothered to tie my feet, so I leapt on top of him. I landed on top of the outstretched knife in his hands. The blade connected with the soft tissue in my stomach. I fell backwards with the knife still in my gut before Jamie pulled it out cleanly. He got up. He laughed for a second. Like, "Dude, what the fuck, dude? What were we thinking?" Then he rose the blade over his head, black eye and all, and prepared to bring it down one final time. But before that could happen, a gunshot broke through the night. Jamie collapsed. He died inches from my side. I nearly joined him. The man who fired the fatal shot was a police officer who witnessed the fight. My mom called them when I didn't come home in time. Like I said, she never quite trusted Jamie, and that distrust may have saved my life. The cops quickly arranged for an ambulance, and after a couple of blood transfusions, I was able to survive. We did not go to the funeral. Fuck him. I did not go to school. My parents stopped going to work. Eventually, the gossip in town became too much and we decided to move. But I tell you what, I will never forget my final night in that house. Mom and Dad made my favorite meal. Pepperoni pizza, bread, and garlic cheese. A heart attack waiting to happen. Yeah, I know. I think they felt guilty about the move. I think they felt guilty about Jamie. And so we decided to have a family night. All three of us sat by the TV and watched all our favorite Christmas movies. I'll tell you what, I loved it. I went to bed with the warm memories almost outweighing the negative. But that night, sometime after 3, I woke up to a strange noise emanating from the woods. The hairs on my arms stood up. They still do whenever I think about it. A metal detector pinged lazily from the woods. I shot out of bed and listened to it carefully. And as sure as I'm sitting here, I heard it just underneath the lazy raindrops. A woman was crying. Ha ha ha! That was one of the best creepy puzzles I've heard and read in a long time. Espero que les haya gustado. Una vez más, fue escrita por Matt Richardson, narrada por Ricardo Becerra, del podcast de La Parque Historia de Terror. Pueden encontrar este podcast en creepypasta.com. Regreso pronto. Espero que estén bien. Cuídense, protéjanse, quédense en casa. Pronto saldremos de esto. Nos vemos. Adiós.